Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 181 of Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. And in today's show, Kelvin revisits EdgeRank and talks to Chad Whitman from EdgeRank Checker. All coming up in Internet Marketing.
So, I know, Chad, in the past that we've exchanged emails and had some conversations about EdgeRank. Can you kind of, you know, for the audience members who might not have heard of EdgeRank before, and that's kind of involvement in Facebook, kind of explain a little bit about EdgeRank and kind of some of the basic ideas and tenets behind it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, basically, Facebook has the news feed, and it used to just publish just straight content as it came in, and Facebook quickly realized a ton of content that had to be kind of digested for each user, and certain things were more important for other users, and so they basically made this algorithm called EdgeRank that basically presents content that's hopefully the most relevant to the Facebook user as they log on. So for brands that are on there, they want to make sure that that content is the most important content that Facebook sees and gives them the most exposure, so that their kind of their messaging is going out to the most people as possible. And I kind of make the analogy a lot of times of kind of the old search engines, mm-hmm. where they used to be directories, and then they had to take a look at, okay, how do we actually process millions of websites on the internet? Google came up with an algorithm called PageRank to give you the best results when you type in that content. So it's kind of that same general concept, but it's in the newsfeed of giving the best content from a social context.
And kind of, so what are the kind of particular things that, you know, Facebook have shared that kind of inform and decide what appears in the newsfeed? Kind of, are there particular factors that they're
Yeah, I mean, there? The exact they use are affinity and weight and time decay, and basically affinity is your relationship between the two users or the two objects. So it's basically Facebook's monitoring, the way I like to describe it is that they're monitoring basically anything and everything they can to understand a relationship between two users. And so when you're talking about two individuals on Facebook, they might look at the messaging between each other. They might look at, timeline visits, or, if you're always liking their content or, commenting or sharing, just basically constant engagement between two people or a brand and a fan. They're going to be looking at that because basically where they rank certain actions, they're going to see actions as more important than other actions. So from a brand perspective, they might look at a share as being more important than a like, or a comment being more important than a like. And then time decay is just basically as things get older in Facebook, they want to give it less value so that you're seeing new, fresh, exciting things in Facebook. So those are the kind of the three different variables that go into the actual algorithm.
And I know kind of like yourself and myself and various people have kind of written about EdgeRank over a sort of a number of years now. And I mean, it seems to be that, you know, time in the past where perhaps very few people knew about it, there's certainly kind of been an increase in awareness of the algorithm over particularly the last sort of 12 months or so. But, you know, in the process of more people becoming aware of it, I seem to be coming across more people who perhaps misunderstand or kind of misinterpret what Facebook have told us about EdgeRank, you know, that's kind of based on the information that they've shared. And also kind of speculating is what's kind of, is there any particular misconceptions or, you know, ways that people have perhaps misunderstood the idea of edge rank that you've come across that you think are kind of worth noting and kind of understanding the real way that it works, or perhaps the kind of misunderstanding that that person's made?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one thing that, when Facebook first came out, I think at F8 2010, and mentioned the concept and provided a few screens describing what it is they're doing, for me at least, I jumped right into it and really wanted to analyze and understand what exactly it was they're doing. And in that process of my research of kind of how brands were being impacted by the algorithm and how they're improving and things of that nature, I went down this path of building a tool called EdgeRank Checker to help brands understand how EdgeRank was impacting their content. Mm. Now, part of that process of understanding this algorithm, the algorithm is relatively simple, but it's also very complex, and it also more complex kind of the deeper you dig into it. Mm-hmm. So it makes for very kind of high-end analytical mathematical type discussion when you're talking about it, when you're talking about the nuts and bolts. But what happens a lot of times when you're working with marketers trying to understand it, at least from my perspective, I try to boil it down so that they understand mm-hmm. the concept and how we're going to go ahead and improve that. Because I think marketers care less about necessarily the nuts and bolts of exactly how A is affecting B. They want to know, how do I improve kind of what we're talking about? And through that philosophy, our product, EdgeRank Checker, we provide EdgeRank scores for pages. We provide basically the average impact of EdgeRank on the average piece of content for that day. And we try to simplify that process so you're able to measure the average effect of EdgeRank throughout day over day. So you're able to look at, is that going positive or negative, so that we can then provide recommendations to help you improve that effect. Mm. And through that process of us kind of being one of the leads on understanding this concept, there's some misconceptions of, is Facebook exactly assigning an EdgeRank score to a page? And the answer is no. However, there is an average affinity level of all your fans on average with your page, which in effect is going to be a score that is kind of like an EdgeRank score for the entire page, because you basically have a set. If you could measure the affinity between every single user and every single page and every single piece of content and look at that average effect, that number would basically give you that average, effect. And so the way that you can see that in your own insights, if you dive into your own insights, there's basically, as you push out your content, you're always going to have the same kind of general probably reach percentage that you're hitting, kind of relatively independent of the engagement that you're receiving on that particular piece of content, which effectively is showing you a certain page might be always basically hitting 40% reach, which is a great number, basically as their content, regardless of the quality of their content of that day. And then a competitor or someone of that similar size, similar whatever, they might be only reaching 5% of that same audience. And it's basically due to the fact that they've lost a lot of their affinity with their fans. And so that's probably one of the biggest kind of confusion points talk about when you actually get in the nuts and bolts of experts talking about EdgeRank, and when you start talking about the marketing and how do we actually take advantage of this kind of elaborate algorithm. Mm. We're just trying to boil it down, kind of like when you go to PageRank checking, when you go to like prrankchecker.com, they have, just give me a 4 out of 10. I want to know what that means and how can I improve it to get a 5 out of 10 that's going to give me search engine results. And that's what we're doing with it.
Yeah. No, I think you're entirely right there. That kind of I kind of get why the tool is kind of headed in that direction, because it's kind of difficult to produce something that kind of works in that way. But yeah, there certainly seems to be this kind of idea that EdgeRank is a score that someone has, and whereas actually EdgeRank is kind of, it's just, it's a scoring that happens each and every time you log in between each and every piece of content that's occurring, and rather than on a page level, it's not even on a day to day, but it's on each individual piece of content, and that's unique to each individual person as well, because there's going to be scores of affinity. But it'll be a spectrum, won't it? You'll have some people who have a very, of your, say, your imaginary 1,000 fans, you might have, 10 who have an exceedingly high affinity score, and, right. 10 who have an exceedingly low affinity score, and then you have a kind of distribution within there. And I suppose what you're trying to do is look at where the average of that distribution is and that type of thing.
Absolutely. And more importantly, I want to know, how do we improve that? How do we get more exposure? And so we're trying to basically set a guideline to let's this black box of EdgeRank that, you know, Facebook's the only one who truly understands. We want to shine a little bit of a light in there and say, hey, look, this is where we're putting our flag down. This is where we're going to start exploring. We'll go from here to start understanding this process so that we can improve our marketing efforts. And, you know, and that's what we're trying to provide, is that little nugget of perspective that basically was non-existent before we started doing that.
No, interesting. I mean, I've got a couple of questions, Chad, about kind of, you know, from your experience of, you know, looking at some of these things in terms of particularly around weight. And I think I want to talk about a bit before. And when I've presented in the past about EdgeRank and kind of talked about the kind of concept of weight and that, you know, certain types of content are more likely to appear in news feeds than others. And kind of, you know, a piece of content which accumulates lots of interactions with it kind of is more likely to appear in there. A question that's come back to me a couple of times, and I've not, you know, completely known the answer to the question, is kind of talking about kind of third-party tools. And the question is, you know, if I use Hootsuite rather than make the update directly in Facebook, do you think that potentially has a different weight to it? And my answer has always been, conceptually I can understand how Facebook might prefer content to be uploaded in certain ways kind of within the interface rather than using an automated tool. But I didn't know that kind of like I didn't have examples of kind of where two identical pieces of content that were, you know, created, which one would be more likely to appear in someone's newsfeed than the others. Is that something that you've had experience of, or kind of a, you know, an understanding of, you know, how the tools you use to interact with Facebook might potentially have an impact on the likelihood of that status update or that photo or that video appearing within someone's newsfeed?
Yeah, that's a great question. We didn't. Had you asked me about a year or so ago, we were doing a study because it was kind of a popular belief in the EdgeRank kind of community that using a third party like that really just was detrimental to the basically the EdgeRank of that piece of content. And so I decided to kind of dig into it deeper, kind of with our data set to start analyzing that. And basically, at that time, that was back when the top news feed and the most recent news feed existed, and that was before the whole timeline rollout and everything. And it was also a time that Facebook often grouped posts by publishers. So a lot of times I'd see like the RSS feeds or whatever. They'd be grouped, there'd be 10 of them to one basically object. And then they would say, would you like to see more? And you'd click on that and you'd see more. And they did that with Hootsuite, and they did that with any third-party API at that time. And so when we did our research, we basically found that when using a third-party API, that we were seeing about 88% less engagement for that piece of content compared to a normal piece of content, and that's obviously detrimental to EdgeRank of object. You're basically taking away its life force. So, you know, you want likes, comments, clicks, shares, all these different pieces that go into a brand's piece of content. And again, all of our data comes from the brand side, but you can apply it as well, you know, to fan or user to user. But so we did this research and we published it, and a lot of people came out, and it really caused a stir a bit in the community. And it was really interesting because a lot of the people that came out and said that it was that they didn't like it or they didn't agree with it, their data didn't line up, were kind of third party publishers, and they jumped all over us saying this isn't accurate. And then we had a couple companies come out that were kind of in the big industry and say, hey, we've noticed this was an issue. We didn't really want to say anything about it at the time because it negatively impacted our business, but it is something that's being dealing with, and we want Facebook to do something about it. About a month or two later, that whole newsfeed was edited or put together, and they made the timeline and then the hybrid newsfeed. And long story short, Facebook kind of in the developer side of
small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah! What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Things. There was a bug that was submitted. It had to do with publishing in the news feed and aspects, and it was submitted by one of the big publishing companies, and Facebook ended up addressing it and putting in a fix. So we ended up doing a follow-up research, and we basically found that from our perspective, it looks like Facebook isn't giving like an inherent penalty to any third-party API as now. Now, what I'm not saying by saying that is that doesn't necessarily mean that those third-party APIs aren't suffering from an engagement perspective still. But what we're seeing is that Facebook isn't necessarily inherently punishing you just for using a third-party API. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times people and your fans and your users aren't engaging with it as well just due to the so many people kind of abusing the automated process of, you know, hey, it's Friday today. Congratulations, like have a great weekend, instead of something live and from the office or from the brand's perspective that happened that day. Really is engaging. And I use a lot of times like sporting brands that are doing that are sports on Facebook. You know, if they didn't publish the newest highlight of the day or whatever, and they just did automated everything of what they thought might happen, you know, fans are going to be less engaged with that. And you see that just kind of across the board in general with third-party API. So if you can, if your content is kind of timeless, then I tell brands, hey, like go for it. It's all right. But if you can publish it, like spur of the moment, I think that shines through in automation, and you typically see more engagement just to the quality of the posting impromptu.
Yeah, I think you're entirely right there, isn't it? It's, you know, it's not necessarily the tool that's leading to lower engagement and therefore potentially lower affinity and lower edge rank. It's actually the content that's doing that. And there's, you know, good content is perhaps more likely to be put in, you know, entered, you know, manually within the site than something that is rescheduled for a third party API. So that certainly seems to kind of there's kind of two elements to it there as well. And I suppose you do wonder if kind of, you know, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy there, isn't it? It's not, you have a lower edge rank, but that's not as a consequence of the tool. That's as a consequence of the content you're using the tool to produce. And there was another question I was asked recently that kind of, again, it was an interesting one where someone had kind of made the point that, you know, when you're looking and kind of coming from an SEO perspective, and they were talking about, well, is the, you know, talking about content that's shared, that's links, you know, that's essentially outside of the Facebook ecosystem. And they seem to be implying that EdgeRank was something that was related to a domain, if you see what I mean. So like a piece of content from, you know, the New York Times has potentially a greater weight than a piece of content from, you know, kelvinnewman.com. And that's certainly not something that I've experienced. And I think it's kind of far more document based with links and that type of thing. Is that kind of the experience that you've had as well? So there's no kind of intrinsic one publisher is considered more worthy of appearance in the newsfeed than another. And I suppose this is kind of removing applications and frictionless sharing from the equation, which I think is kind of quite a different sort of environment altogether.
We haven't seen anything with that specifically, but I necessarily haven't researched like where the outbound link is in the correlation. Part of the problem with, you know, studying any of this stuff, and, you know, we talk about like if we were, let's say we were to analyze through our data and we were to grab, you know, all the links and see where they're pointing to and see the engagement, I would probably argue that, you know, the New York Times wrote a more engaging piece of content than JoeSmith.com. And so you start to get into this area of, you know, it's, you know, there's a correlation, but is there a causation and of understanding these links. And so long story short, we haven't analyzed it. I don't have any exact numbers on it. I personally don't believe that Facebook is doing that. That's just a hunch. That's just my intuition. If we did research it, I do think there would be a little bit of a, how much of it's correlation, how much of it's causation. So, but my hunch is, my intuition is telling me, I don't think they're looking at where that outbound exactly link is going. And that's just more to the fact of, how they structure their API. I mean, we deal with this API, we deal with the developer side, that, you know, we see how this process tends to work. And I just don't feel like they're doing, and I feel like they would be doing more link analysis in Insights if that were true. And that's, well, kind of where I'm thinking.
Yeah, and I suppose it's also the fact as well that, you know, the vast majority of the content that's going through that system doesn't have a third-party link, does it? You know, it's kind of going externally. Most of it's for people doing photos within Facebook, people doing, you know, status updates within Facebook, and all that kind of within the ecosystem. So it just seems that would be a kind of a weird sort of way of thinking about, I suppose, a relatively small subsection of the amount of content that they're trying to, you know, algorithmically determine which is the most important, which kind of always seemed the logic from my perspective, that, you know, it doesn't seem a logical way of doing things when it's only a small subsection of the type of content that they're trying to determine.
And I don't really see the value of Facebook caring on, you know, the New York Times versus, you know, JoeSmith.com. I mean, if JoeSmith.com, you know, cured cancer, I think Facebook would want that piece of content to override any piece of content. So I think they're really just looking at the quality of that content and, you know, making sure it's not spam, basically, and just treating it like any other object and just giving it more love, the more value that it has. And when we talk about all this stuff, it's kind of funny because the conversation ends up going kind of backwards, in that I say, you know, hey, it's about Facebook putting out the best content possible in front of everyone. And so a lot of times brands get really wrapped up in doing this and doing that and won't change this. And I say, look, if you have something awesome, like just publish it.
Yeah.
Facebook is going to work out well. Yeah. If you have something that's lame, then don't. And so it's kind of like the more you dig into it, the more simple sometimes it becomes, and just do stuff awesome. And what we try to do is basically with our product is try to line up those best times of day to give you that best opportunity to say, hey, I'm going to have something awesome today. This will give you a little bit more kind of bang for your buck by going instead of posting at, you know, 3 a.m. or whatever it may be.
Yeah, so it's about getting that kind of extra 1% rather than being much more than that, isn't it? It's the kind of the 99% of the effort's got to be on the thing that you're producing in the first case. And, you know, understanding Edge Rank might get you that extra 1% that gets you, you know, an extra 1% worth of visitors, or, you know, kind of it's that type of thing, isn't it? It's the icing on the cake rather than the cake itself.
Yeah, I mean, in the brands that are understanding, you know, timing and how to broadcast their content at the right, you know, how often, at what times of day, what days of week, and things of that nature. I mean, you're basically able to get, you know, an extra boost in it, and they're to margins, and they add up. And for the big brands, I mean, that can result in a huge bottom line ROI stuff. And for the small brands, they can start that ROI process for them, you know.
And in terms of kind of, you know, to finish up, some sort of general advice that you offer to people, that if they have a Facebook page, they're kind of okay, they're aware now of EdgeRank, and, you know, they're aware of kind of affinity and weight and, you know, decay, and they're kind of aware of these terms, and they kind of get an understanding. Is there any particular advice you can have, you know, beyond the produce great content, that, you know, generally tends to apply in terms of for people, you know, increasing their likelihood of appearing?
Yeah, I think the future of understanding Facebook analytics and succeeding on Facebook marketing with your Facebook page is really going to be, first of all, coming up with a solid fan acquisition model, making sure that you're acquiring fans in the right way, and you're encouraging the right fans to be a fan. We've gone through that phase, and hopefully it's over, but I'm guessing it's not. But just giving away an iPad or giving away, you know, whatever, just to get, you know, all these fans or buying fans, whatever it may be, is not the path to succeeding on Facebook. It's about acquiring, you know, real fans that are actually tangible, you know, they have a real personality, and they're actually interested in your product or your brand or what you're trying to do. And once you've done that, and so many brands skip that by just, like I said, giving away the iPad or, you know, giving away a MacBook just to get the average person to like their page is really a really bad strategy. It's going to hurt you long term. So assuming you have that audience that you've built or you're starting to build, and even if it's small for the small brands out there, it's okay to have a small brand. As I mean, those are real customers, again, that can, you know, can make purchasing decisions for your brand, is to really understand them and really understand how they want to consume your content, when they want to consume it, where. I use the analogy a lot of times of, let's say you had like a very blue collar audience and they don't have internet access at work. You know, they're in the factory working all day, and they check either Facebook before work and after work. you don't want to publish content in the middle of the day when they're not there. You want to make sure you're publishing content when they're at home and using their computer. Now, that same token, you want to start to understand the process of, does my audience, you know, and you can look at demographic information to say, does my audience consume this stuff on mobile or desktop? Now, that might start to change. Well, are they going to want to see more videos? Are they going to want to see more status updates? And so, aside from understanding great content and pushing great content, because the great content will kind of arise above a lot of these timing issues, but really putting out that kind of that okay, today I want to publish a piece of content that goes out to my fans. How am I going to do this? We want to publish that stuff in a way that they can consume it. And again, that comes back to, you know, when are they at work during this time? Or do they want to, are they commuting maybe and they don't want to watch video because their internet connection is not the greatest and they just want to look at status updates and photos? And just understanding your audience and what it is they want, and that comes from a content perspective, and then how they want to consume it, I think is kind of the future of understanding that and looking at that those two relationships. And then, of course, publishing great content that's amazing to you know, actually engage them. And the last part is, it's kind of sounds silly, but give it a call to action in your content. You know, tell fans what it is that you want. We're starting to see a lot of content like this now that this kind of piece of advice is really going around. But we truly do see higher results with brands that typically ask for engagement. They tell their fans, like us, like if you agree with this, or comment if you'd like this. And if for what it's worth, humans are doing it, and it's creating more engagement, and it's creating more results for the brands that are leveraging that type of strategy.
Fantastic. No, some sound advice there, Chad. I think it's a really interesting topic, and one that I think, you know, more people are beginning to understand, and it, you know, potentially there's quite a lot of value to be had there from, you know, making more from your Facebook campaign. And it's perhaps not going to dramatically change how you go about things, but like you say, it's those slight tweaks that can potentially have quite a disproportionate effect on the success of a campaign.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. No, really appreciate that, Chad.
Yeah, not a problem.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150. And you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.